you've already had one show.
Yep.
How did it go?
It was pretty amazing, actually. Yeah. I mean, WOMAD crowds definitely have got this, you know, I think the people that come to festivals like this already have like a kind of love for the music and an acceptance that you don't really have to work too hard because they have a love for music, this openness. And you could, you know, 30 seconds in, 40 seconds in, I can usually tell what we're dealing with, you know. And smiling faces, people kind of getting and staying, and just that the feeling of this sense of let's have a party. And so when I feel that as kind of a front man, it's kind of like, okay, cool. I don't have to actually work hard for the first 5-10 minutes just to kind of get a connection happening, because it's already there, you know. So whereas a pub gig or a festival that's more like youth based, you know, or you kind of have to kind of, you know, work out some kind of language to make a connection. But today, and so in our first joint really overseas, and you know, we're all a bit nervous about doing it, so it was just like, you know, after kind of 30 seconds I look at the bass player and said, we're good, you know.
Who's in the room? Are you ready to get smart? Overseas, and how many are you?
30.
30 people?
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
It is, yeah.
A lot of people to travel on an airplane.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And to pay for and all that.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, you know, festivals like this have got budgets that, you know, they can, you know, artists that from overseas that are big, you know, big name artists anyway, that have a big fee anyway. So they're kind of used to paying dollars, you know, so. You know, we're not actually matching their fees per person. Right. You know, we're actually.
But it's a good niche for you to start traveling with.
Exactly.
Rather than on your own.
And we thought we were going to break it down and travel with 15 and get players over here and everything. And we just said, look, you know, if we can make it work where everyone just gets paid, you know, a little bit less, we get some cheap airfares, so we get them early, get it early on in the piece. And because, you know, our first conversation was, oh, no, it's not really going to happen, you know, because, you know, we can't afford it. I said, well, look, if you look at the airfares right now, and if you're taking care of accommodation and transporting us from the airport to the festival, I can work out a deal with my boys where you know, we'll do it, you know. And so, yeah.
This is a hugely mixed audience, isn't it? So well, there'll be some people here who listened to Scar back then.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah. So how does your Melbourne Scar relate to Scar back then?
Well, the band started off as a joke, actually, on the 40th anniversary of Scar in 2003, in the Gershon Room in Melbourne at the Esplanade in St Kilda. We just wanted to see how many horn players we can get on stage to do the skank that chink chink chink, and it was, and we just put the word out, and we were inundated with how many people that wanted to be involved. And we didn't realise how big the Scar scene was in Melbourne. There's bands like Loin Groin, Commissioner Gordon, 99% Fat, Red Sand Shuffle, Trojan Horns, Bomber, which was my band, you know, and we were doing more of a funk reggae blend. But, you know, because Scar was the seed, you know, and then reggae and dancehall and lovers rock, it all came from the Scar seed, you know. And so it was like, wow, this is actually, you know, kind of bigger than we thought. The place was packed, turned away about 300 people, and it was more about the celebration of the music in the evening, and it was like something special happened. We totally forgot about the world record and whether we actually set it or not, and we still haven't found out to this day whether. But the band was born that night. And so 10 years later, which is now 2013, when we released our debut album, up until then, or up until about 3 years ago, we were just basically a ska education band. You know, we played all the stuff from the first wave of ska, which was 63, you know, with Scatterlights, Millie Small, My Boy Lollipop, you know, Two Tenor Maytals, if you like, you know, Bob Marley and the Wailers, Simmer Down. I mean, 63, that was when ska hit the planet.
Was that in Australia as well?
Oh yeah, it was worldwide.
In Millie London, Small, there was a big ska scene.
Millie Small, 1963, was a worldwide hit. And then what happened is the Windrush movement, when all the West Indians moved from Jamaica to London, you know, the Brixton scene, all that type of thing, and that was the two-tone. And that's where I got into ska in the first place, where the Specials, the Madness, and the British Beat, and the Selector, you know, and the 80s. And so my first thing was Message to Rudy, you know, that was my first, and I didn't realise that was a cover, you know, by Dandy Livingston, you know. And so when I realised, well, this is actually the second wave of this stuff, it opened up a whole can of worms for me, you know, and my love of reggae just exploded to the point that, you know, I went to Jamaica on a pilgrimage, you know. So we kind of see ourselves as kind of the third wave, right? But every time we perform live, we always had those reference songs, and we still do. And so, and what we're offering is now, it's like with a band song like Lygon Street Meltdown, which is our, you know, Melbourne-centric, you know, a song about, it's a sense of time and place. It's our type of ska, you know, with reference, you know, with musical references. And then we do the hybrid things, like songs like Tripper, which is a song about Lee Perry and James Brown. And the song is a James Brown groove over a skank horn type of thing, you know. So we're trying to offer something new to the genre.
Quizás está loco, pero puede ser un genio.
An astronaut who twisted thought, who went by the name of Lee. He flew his ark like a space machine to a docked out galaxy. People called him the funny boy when he burnt his studio down, singing on the great upset town, Mobay to Kingston Town.
Like the crazy Mr. Perry man, number one producer, he's a melody seducer. There's a method in the madness plan.
Another brother in the hot space suit, Godfather Mr. Brown. He found the groove like no one else, showed us how to get down. He always took it higher, but sometimes he forgot to stop. When the police had tried to slow him down, he said, "Hey man, get on up."
Never forget, cool soul power king. Came here on a mission with a functified vision to get up off of that thing.
Thank you.
it wasn't just about having an album that was like, well, we're just going to, you know, do a cover songs. And we really wanted to offer something new. And so we had 20 songs to choose from. And so the 15 songs that ended up on the album was exactly that, was a kind of a chronological reference. There's a song called "Time for the Monkey to Get Off with It." Is to get off of this ride, it's just a classic 60s ska swing. Then you got songs like "Time to Wake Up," which is your message to Rudy kind of sort of vibe. And then you've got the Hybrids that I was just talking about.
And you've just got a record deal.
Yeah. Well, so what happened? So I was always writing. So I was writing reggae and that type of thing. And so I'd written a couple of tunes that we started playing live. We did our performance at Blues Fest. Created a big splash. We were asked back the next year, and in that interim, we started getting all these other gigs, all these other things happening from that one gig. We played Blues Fest again, and on that gig, ABC, the new label 4/4, saw us, loved us, and said, "Let's do a deal." And so from that time till this year, where we play Blues Fest again, which is unheard of for a band to play 3 years in a row, an Australian band. I wrote for the orchestra. There were songs that I'd already written that fit into the genre really well. There were songs that I wrote specifically for the orchestra with the idea of the Hybrids. And then we did this think tank thing where we had two sessions where I invited all the members of the band, and the rules were there are no rules. Let's just see what happens. Let's see what comes out of it. Now, normally in that situation, you don't really come up with much. It's usually maybe a couple of snippets of ideas, and just like, because it's like, you know, and it's a bumbling democracy, you know,
ideas.
But the musicianship in the band and the knowledge and the love they had for that genre, about six or seven of the songs that are on the album are directly from those think tank sessions. So it was a real. You know, it was quite unique. So we did actually, and you know, I can pinpoint those songs, and Lygon Street Meltdown was a it sounded like there was a detective program in Australia called Division 4. I don't know if you've even heard about it, or Homicide, and it was set in Russell Street, which is a continuation of Lygon Street in Carlton, and it sounded like a police TV theme. And TV themes are a big part of ska, you know, the Dr. Zhivago, and Guns of Navarone, James Bond, you know. And so we had that kind of that thing, and I called it the Lygon Street Meltdown, not knowing what the song was going to be about.
Faraday, but you'll be the currency tonight. Love careless words. Crime will never pay. You cross the line, then you will suffer.
From the think tank, we came up with the title, and then I'd go home and do my homework and write the lyrics. And I wrote most of the lyrics, you know, apart from one or two songs where I collaborated. But the music was a combination of that.
Is there still an edgy sense to Melbourne ska as it is these days, as there was to ska back in the 60s?
Well, I think Lygon Street Meltdown is a perfect example of that. We wanted that danger. We wanted that. The ska in the 60s was. Ska, I think, has always had a political backdrop. It was independence, but then there was the rude boy thing that happened. There was a danger to it. It was like Simmer Down was just about putting your guns down. That's what that song was about, you know. So there was this kind of like, yeah, energized, but you know, energy with a positive message type of thing, you know. The two-tone thing was Thatcher's England, you know, and so, you know, Gangsters, Specials' first songs was you know, it's, again, this is like, you know, a multiracial band, which was, you know, what was happening with the Brixton riots and everything, and then you got the, you know, that kind of, that angst, you know, and people would be, you know, it would be, if you ever went to a, you know, a Specials concert or a Madness concert, you know, it was this kind of high energy thing. But with the kind of reggae kind of halftime thing, political stance, but also like a whole sense of positivity to it, you know. So we tried to capture all that, and I think Lygon Street Meltdown is a good example of that edge, because it's all about the underbelly scene that happened in Melbourne at the time, you know. So it kind of made all sense, you know. And the message, you know, the verse, the bridge goes. I recall my mama's words, the crime will never pay. You cross the line, then you will suffer. You know, so the song has got that message in it as well, you know. So
we
try to reflect that, yeah.
I'm aware that we've been hovered over.
Oh, really? Okay, sorry, I've just rambled on, haven't I?
No, that's great.
Oh,
no,
sorry.
But the main stuff I wanted to get at was this stuff, is it about the relevance to the young people now, to people now? And back then, this edginess.
I think it's all of it.
This crime. That's
I mean, the
there,
fact
whatever,
that you have here, you got an over 65 stage, and we can do something like My Boy Lollipop, and they're going crazy. Then we can do one of our songs, and they're still going crazy. Then Night Boat to Cairo, they're, you know. Yeah. So I think if you're a converted scarhead, you're always a converted scarhead. You know, like 60s, that type of thing. And some people don't know that they actually love scar. And don't even know what it is, and then they go, oh, it's that, you know, like, I think it's actually one of the most universal forms of music on the planet, you know, because it's got all these different rhythmic levels to it, it's got a positivity about it, you know, and
another great way to get a lot of horns on stage.
Yeah, great.
Because that seems to be very common. We live in New York, and there's a lot of horn-based bands, and it seems to be a world phenomenon. I don't know whether it's all these people coming out of the music schools and stuff, but there's a lot of horn players on stage these days.
I couldn't even pinpoint kind of why we even went that particular route, you know, but the beautiful thing about these players is that you're not your standard horn players. They don't just sit and play a part and, you know, the mayhem, like in Night Boat to Cairo, that is one of my I just sit back and watch sometimes, like, yay, you know, and you can't help it but, you know, be enthused by the energy, you know, and it's all about energy, and we're all energy, you know, we're all manifestations of energy, you know, so it's about making a connection, and it's that they walk away with something, and we walk away with something as
there's
well.
There's a party,
you know,
in the crowd, but there's also a party on the stage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that, and you kind of, you have to work at it sometimes to sort of get the connection happening, but, you know, that's something I think is what music's about, is that connection, you know, and that's I think it's an important, you know, I think we're doing something, you know, important and therapeutic even, you know.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
No worries. Okay.
All right. Look forward to hearing you tomorrow.
Yeah, it should be good. Okay, bless.
Cheers.
No
Thank
worries.
You.
Okay, thanks.
One, two.
Oh, the moon belongs to everyone. The best things in life are free. Stars belong to everyone. They gleam there for you and